Hello friends, it is my pleasure to be with you again today as we keep on examining chapter 13 and in particular the beast rising from the earth. We have been studying up to verse 14, so now let's resume from verse 15. Revelation chapter 13, verse 15. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. We have here an extremely curious phenomenon. Curious, but only at first sight. See, men have created a system, an image to the beast. This is but an image. It is lifeless. So, the two-horned beast will bring it to life. It was this beast which headed the creation of the system by people around the world. And now that these people around the world have made this image to the beast, they can worship it in a universal adoration. However, it must be given some consistency. So, the beast rising from the earth will give breath to the image. It does it in such a way that the image becomes extremely cruel. And if initially the system is made so that all men may join it, in fact, those who do not adhere to it are severely threatened to the point that a death decree seems to strike them. We read in verse 15, and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Thus, a death decree. We have some examples of death decrees in the Word of God. First of all, with Nebuchadnezzar. A death decree threatened those who would not worship the statue he had set up in the plain of Dura, where he had convened all the dignitaries of all known countries to a meeting. Obviously, the rest. And that's where we understand the real meaning of a remnant of the faithful ones, that is, the three companions of Daniel, who did not bow down. So, in a general adoration, in a general prostration, it is understandable that three men remaining on their feet while all the whole assembly was on its knees must have been quite visible. Likewise, during the general adoration, during the general prostration, which will take place in favor of the image of the beast, we can understand that the few who will not give up will be immediately noticed. So, the image of the beast is given power to speak, but in an extremely severe way. You see, in Esther's time too, the people faced a death threat. In Esther's time, King Ahasuerus' wife, though she be the queen, yet the Prime Minister Haman managed to have Ahasuerus sign a decree requiring the death penalty for all the Jews of his kingdom. While the threat was hanging over the entire Jewish people, Esther's cousin Mordecai informed her about it. One would think that Esther, being at the palace, could have said to herself that God, having led her to be the queen by chance, he would spare her. On the contrary, Mordecai reminds her that if she has come to that high position, it may be for that very moment in order to intervene in favor of God's people. Similarly, regardless of the position of God's children, in whatever circumstances they could believe that God has placed them there, expecting us to intervene in favor of these people. In Esther's case, had she not intervened, she would have been threatened as well. A second example closer to us is in the history framework, the Roman Empire. When the first Christians arrived, if it were to worship a new God called Jesus, well, no problem, just another God to be added. And if it were to adopt a general worship where everyone may worship the God he wants, provided the authority in place be recognized and respected, then it would be easier to adhere. But Christians have a different God. Christians have a unique God. Christians have a God who does not tolerate other gods. In this case, the Roman Empire became extremely severe. It was being tolerant to say, one more God? Yes, but of course you accept it. But the God who does not agree with them, who is not compatible with other gods, this becomes extremely annoying. Consequently, the Roman Empire became harsh, and Christians were put to death. We see here several examples of apparent tolerance, which ultimately result in intolerance, even unto death. And that's what happened. Now, with verse 16, we address another issue. Let's read it. Revelation 13, 16. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. The system is such that it will require all the inhabitants of the earth to receive a mark. Obviously, we are entitled to ask ourselves, what is this mark all about? And many modern interpretations involve computers, implantation, concepts under the skin. I'm not denying that computers can play a part in the monitoring of God's people. For it is true that we are filed everywhere. But I would not want computers to make us lose sight of another perspective. And it is this different perspective that I would like to consider with you. Because this mark of the beast is a new plagiarism, we have already seen several of them. This plagiarism of something that already exists, it is the seal of God. So, we have here two systems that both mark their members. With a small difference though, God's seal is placed on the forehead, while the mark of the beast is on the forehead or on the hand. There is certainly something here that must tell us about the nature of this seal or this mark. Let me share with you a text we find in the book of Exodus, chapters 13, verses 7 to 9. Exodus 13, 7 to 9. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, This is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand, the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. Here is a typical example of a law of God, a prescription of God, which concerned the celebration of Easter, which celebration was to remind what happened at the Exodus from Egypt. Furthermore, in verses 15 and 16, we find the same idea. Let's read them together. Exodus 13, 15 to 16. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go, that the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore, I sacrifice to the Lord all males that open the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a sign on your hand and as frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt. What's the point of giving a sign, a ritual, and saying that it marks both the forehead and the hand? We'll see also another text later. This has to do with doing something, and it corresponds to what is marked on the hand. But the purpose of this doing, of this ritual, of this repetition, is to bring to remembrance. That is the part concerning the forehead, refreshing memories about what God has done for His people. So you see, God knows that when we do something, it causes us to reflect. So it is with God's people, to do something, to remember, and to pass it on across generations. Let me invite you to read another text in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, verses 5 to 8. Deuteronomy chapter 6, 5-8. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. These signs, these commandments, are not just signs. They are to be lived, and they are called to live with the heart, not just as a ritual. They are to be deeply lived. Obviously, the fact of doing recalls what should be in the thought and reminds of what God has done for His people. So we have something that affects both the doing and the thinking, the memory. It is out of question for God to ask something that be only ritual. It would make no sense. This is why God's seal will be applied on the forehead. It requires adherence of heart and thought, and this adherence will inevitably result in doing. While the beast will ask that mark be on the forehead or on the hand, that is, he may be content with the doing without involving the heart or mind or thought.
Sans que l'esprit, sans que la pensée soit engagée.
There lies a fundamental difference. Let's move with the text. I would like to read another text that is found in the same book of Deuteronomy a little further, chapter 11. Let's read Deuteronomy 11:18. Therefore, you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You may see that there is a constant here. When God calls for the hand and the forehead, He wants to tell us that there is something to do and to live from the inside, not separately. Therefore, it is reasonable to think that what the beast will require is a law. That is something to do. He will simply ask it on the hand or on the forehead. One can adhere to what the beast says, thus the mark is then on the forehead. Or one may agree, but nevertheless, do it because he is asked to. Because everyone does it. Because it avoids difficulties. So, one does it just like everyone. This is the mark on the hand, and for the beast, this is sufficient. Two completely different systems. So let's move forward. This mark, or the seal of God, are signs. They are prescriptions, but they are signs. It is a sign of something. We read in the book of the prophet Daniel, chapter 7, verse 24 and 25, a valuable indication. Let's read this text, Daniel 7, 24-25.
Daniel, chapitre 7, versets 24 et 25.
The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the sins of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. What an amazing text, covering point by point what we have already discovered in the book of Revelation. Let's repeat the different elements. Daniel 7:25, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High. We saw that the beast uttered blasphemies against the Most High. Then shall persecute the saints of the Most High. The people of God will be crushed, and moreover, for a specific period of time, for a time and times and half a time. Exactly what we saw in the book of Revelation. Then Daniel's text specifies something else. It tells us the means by which this beast will intervene and shall intend to change times and law. He shall intend to change times and law. So this law, the law of the beast, the mark of the beast, is not a mark in itself, but it is a change brought in the law of God. That's interesting. So we can understand that the seal of God includes a prescription of God, but here the beast will intervene by imposing something that is a change in the law of God. Let's have a look at this text. This text is amazing because it contains two main clauses that speak of the oppression of God's people. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High. And a little further, then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, and times, and half a time. And between these two main clauses, we read, he shall intend to change times and law. It is a well-known literary device called inclusion. The fact that the oppression of the sins of the Most High is quoted in the first and last part of the verse, this will be done through a change of law. We'll come to this change of law some time later. You see, Jesus said, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. And do not think I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. By changing the law, the beast is in fact speaking words against the Most High, because in speaking and changing the law, he undermines the Most High. By changing the law, he also oppresses the people of the saints of the Most High. Here's how the persecution will occur. We'll have more details while broadening this study. But let's be aware that behind a general feeling that will concern the whole earth and which will encompass all people in a common worship, it may be through this change of law that a common worship might take place. Does it matter? How important? Should we reject a small change? Should we refuse to bow down for a time before the image of Nebuchadnezzar, as did the three young Hebrews? Oh, yes. Yes. It is important to know precisely the Word of God, because if God gives a prescription, it certainly has a very deep sense. That's what we shall be studying in the next meeting.